And good evening, everybody. Welcome back to Hoops HD in our brand new format here with our new servicer for our video conference recording.
Are we recording?
And our West Coast Conference preview. Yes, David, are we recording. Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing great. I mean, this is so much better than Google. Joby was such a big fan of Google. At some point, we're going to have to allot him a few minutes to talk about how much he loves Google now that we're with, where are we with?
It's called Zoom.
Zoom. Okay.
Yes. And as you can see, we can all be on the screen at the same time as we're showing it right now. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. Right below me on the screen is David Griggs. Off to the side here, we've got Matt Sikowski, John Titel, and John Stalica down there on the bottom as well. How is everybody?
Good. Thanks, fine.
All right. And we had a little bit of a problem last night when we finally, the straw that broke the camel's back with our old Google's Hangouts, we lost our West Coast Conference preview, and that's why we're here tonight. We're going to be redoing it.
Yeah, you can't watch it, but you can listen to it. It's right down there.
Down there somewhere, and we do have up there the ones we did about the American, the Atlantic, the Atlantic 10 and the Mountain West. I don't even remember what we did last night.
It's also much better video quality. Either that or John T. did some serious lighting changes in his place.
Right. Remember, Chad, you said that we were recording last night, and it turns out we weren't. So are you sure we're recording now?
I really don't know if we're recording or not. And if not, we're just talking to ourselves, but that works as well. But let's get right into our discussion about the West Coast Conference. And let's start where we always start with the WCC, and that's with the Gonzaga Bulldogs. And Matt, we didn't have a chance to talk to you last night, so let me start with you. And Gonzaga, the only team from the WCC to make the tournament last year, probably not going to be the case this year in terms of them being the only team, but what do you think about them coming into the season?
I am really high on this Gonzaga team. I think they have the nice blend of incoming talent, transfers that sat out, and returning talent. And I think we're going to see Gonzaga in the final weekend this year.
Well, are you picking them for the Final Four? Is that what you just said?
Yes, I did.
So you like them as much as Virginia and Duke and Final Four caliber. That's, you really like them. Good Lord.
Well, John Titel, let me turn to you. Do you think Matt's insane to be picking them in the Final Four at this point?
He's as insane as the person who tried to fix my lighting earlier today because it is not working out too well. Yes, they are going to be a good team. They're not going to be a Final Four team for a couple of reasons. Number one, I think they're just cursed as a non-power conference team. I know sometimes you get the Cinderella like a Butler when they were not a Power 5 team or a VCU, but Mark Few, as great a coach as he is, and he is fantastic, love him. He just doesn't have a track record of going deep into March. And if it happens once or twice, it's a coincidence. When it happens 17 times and 17 straight tourneys in a row, I think it's more than just a coincidence. I think it's a trend. Great team, veteran leaders, new blood, all that good stuff. But I think Final Four might be a bit of an overreach.
John T., just take a little issue with you there, actually. I mean, they did make their first Elite Eight ever under Few, I believe, two seasons ago.
Under
Mark Few, he said.
Oh, under Mark Few.
Under Mark Few, yes. The prior Elite Eight had been in Dan Munson's last year there. And last year, a kind of a surprising Sweet 16 run, actually, as an 11 seed. Maybe things are starting to change there for Mark Few. A little more postseason success.
Yeah, no, I think they'll be the Sweet 16 team, probably. I just think that the final weekend, as Matt said, I hope I'm wrong. Like, they're a great team, and they're fun to watch, and I love Coach Few, but I don't – my personal opinion is no.
Okay. John Stalica, the players that they have coming in, especially Jordan Matthews, Nigel Williams-Goss, do you agree with Matt or Titel, or are you going somewhere else with them?
Well, I'm not as high on Gonzaga as Matt would be, but – I still think they have a shot at getting, a top four protected seed. I mean, I like Williams, Goss, and Matthews especially, but it's going to be tough replacing Kyle Wilcher and also Sabonis. So they're also going to be tested in the non-conference, as they always seem to be, with San Diego State as part of the ESPN tip-off marathon. They're going to have three games in the Advocare Classic, and they also have another neutral court game against Arizona. They resume the series with Washington. They have a game against Tennessee in Nashville, and they also have a home game against Akron that you can't sleep on either.
David, what are your thoughts on the Zags team here?
I like them, not as much as Matt, a little more than Tytel, though. I think they're a protected seeded team, four seed range, Sweet 16-ish, maybe, depending on the matchup they get, Elite Eight. It's hard to say how far they'll go into the tournament until it plays out, but going into the tournament, I think they're a protected seed, 3-4 line, but I don't see them as a Final Four caliber team.
We've mentioned the Zags team here now. Going into the season, they are not even the only West Coast Conference team rated in the top 25. The other team being St. Mary's, who are coming off of a lot of wins last year. I believe they had 29 wins last season, although they did not make the NCAA tournament in large part due to their schedule. Stalica, is their schedule going to be improved this year? Let's start with the schedule when we talk about St. Mary's, because that was the number one problem.
They don't necessarily have as many big names on there, but they did do, I guess the alternative would be you want to play as many of the top teams from other conferences as well. Dayton on the road, UAB on a neutral floor, and also keep an eye on games like Texas Arlington, UC Irvine, Western Kentucky, even games like Texas A&M, Corpus Christi, and South Carolina State. These are teams that should finish near the top of their conferences. But as far as their best games, I would still point to Nevada, Dayton, and also a game against Stanford. So they should have a better chance of getting to the tournament this year.
Yeah, they just didn't give themselves a chance last year. Of their 29 wins, I think 28 of them were against sub-NIT teams. Maybe not quite that many, but most of them. They won a lot of close games against weak teams. I wasn't big on them at all last year, but having said that, I do like them a lot this year.
Yeah, David, I do have their schedule right up there on the screen. We still see only two trips out of the state of California non-conference, the trip to Dayton and that UAB game, I believe, is in Las Vegas, which
yes.
It's not much of a trip out of the state of California.
Do you
think this could still bite them in the end?
Possibly, but not to the degree that last year's schedule did, because there is some meat here. Last year it was just cupcakes, empty calories. Nevada, while at home, is at least good. Dayton will win all but one or two of their home games probably. So that's a game that could really, really boost their profile if Dayton only has one or two losses and one of them is to St. Mary's. UAB, a neutral floor game. UAB, maybe fringe bubble, but still better than the kinds of teams they played last year. Stanford, again, getting a road – I think any road win helps. This is much better than what we saw last year. It's not even close.
Now, there is one scheduling note for you. For St. Mary's, they're only playing 11 non-conference games because they're not actually part of an exempt event this year.
Yeah.
Well, let me turn over to you here. In terms of this St. Mary's team actually on the court, do you think they're as good as Gonzaga, or do you think they're a step behind them?
I would say a step behind, but it's closer than it's been in a long time because Randy Bennett has now been there 16 years, defending West Coast Conference Coach of the Year. He's been to five tourneys. He's got a little March experience, and he's got a good little lineup. He's got the Australian pipeline started thanks to his assistant coach, Marty Clark. They got Emmett Narr, who grew up in Australia, junior point guard, and another senior power forward, Dane Pinot. And then he's got the East Coast pipeline with Joe Rahon transferring in from BC. Nice mix of veterans. And it's not just, we talked so much the other night about teams that have a loaded backcourt and no size up front. Pino, a power forward. Calvin Hermanson, a small forward. I think they have a nice lineup. That being said, step below Gonzaga.
Matt, I haven't gotten your thoughts yet on St. Mary's. Since you're putting Gonzaga in the Final Four, you're putting St. Mary's in the Elite Eight?
Not quite that, but what's going to be at all to see him in the Sweet 16?
Okay.
And I think they'll be in that seed range, and assuming they win a couple of those non-conference games and then, say, only pick up two or three losses in a pretty good WCC, I can see them getting something in the 4-6 seed range. And then, and hey, from that, you're either a slight favorite to make the Sweet 16 or a slight dog, and some of them are in the right matchup. Who knows, maybe you're 5 seed and you get, like, one of those where the 13 beats the 4.
Well, let's turn after Gonzaga and St. Mary's. I think there's unless somebody wants to really shock me tonight, I think there's only one other team that's going to be in the NCAA tournament discussion this year, short of a automatic bid sealer, and that's BYU, which is without Kyle Collinsworth, but they do have several other players back. It's a few key transfers coming in, and a few players back from their missions as well. John T., let me start with you. How good is this BYU team this year, even without Collinsworth?
Very good. He's a huge loss, as he racked up more triple-doubles than almost anyone in the history of college basketball. They bring in LJ Rhodes from Houston. They bring back Eric Mika from his mission. They bring up Nick Emery, who was a good freshman shooting guard, to mix with Elijah Bryan, who comes over from Elon. So a lot of good pieces, and they always have the advantage of experience. Even if they're sophomores, they might have gone on a mission for 2 or 3 years, so they're veteran sophomores, if that's a thing. Dave Rhodes has been there now 12 years. I think they have a legit shot. The schedule looks manageable, but I'll, as always, defer to the other John on that.
All right. Let's go to the other John on that, though. How's their schedule look for the Cougars?
This schedule probably looks more like St. Mary's from last year. I mean, the only real notable games they have are going to be two games in Las Vegas, but even then, the first one is against St. Louis. The second one would come against either Alabama or Valparaiso. But other than that, the only games that are probably worth a salt outside of their in-state opponents are going to be USC on a neutral floor, Illinois on a neutral floor, and also Colorado. Note that they are not playing Southern Utah State, but they are playing Utah Valley, Utah State, and Weber State. I think that's everyone, right?
David, is somebody missing from this BYU schedule?
Yeah, someone is conspicuously absent, the Utes, and I know they'll be back on it next year, but, going to miss that one this year. BYU, especially since joining the West Coast, normally a team that schedules pretty hard, they really schedule up. This is way out of character for them. And I know while Tytel said the schedule was manageable, it's a little too manageable. Like, they're kind of denying themselves the chances they need to get to the tournament. Now, USC, Colorado, decent opponents, but they're both at home. You know, if they win 26, 27 games and they don't manage to beat Gonzaga at all and their only win against St. Mary's comes at home, is that enough? Like, we saw a 29-win St. Mary's team not be enough last year. BYU kind of didn't give themselves the chances that they needed to, seeing as good as they are. Not only did they not do it, they not do it after normally doing it. So I'm a little perplexed by the schedule.
Yeah, I think that USC game is a neutral court game. I think that's what the asterisk there means. Matt, yes. They start off the season, interestingly enough, with Princeton at home, which could be a challenge for them, actually.
Oh, yeah, that one we're mentioning, their tough games. Do not overlook Princeton, who quite possibly is a top 50 team coming into this year and maybe an at-large contender if, say, they slip to Harvard in the first ever Ivy League tournament finals.
Okay, I got to get this in because he predicted it in the podcast that we weren't recording. John Tytel, what are your thoughts on that Princeton-BYU game?
I think that it could be a upset special just because it's the very first game of the year, and as I said, BYU has these guys coming back from missions. If they're ready to go from day one, they'll be fine, but I have some doubt. As to the Ivy League at-large potential, I'm going to leave that because that's got a whole other podcast, I think.
Okay. Yeah, we seem to have something come up on the screen there. I got that fixed. But let's go beyond these top three teams, and while we are not looking at anybody else to be an at-large bid contender, we do have some huge turnover here among the rest of these teams, with four new head coaches among these other seven teams this year. And I think, personally, I think that this is a real sign by the rest of the conference that they are ready to try to take that step up and try to remain competitive with the Gonzagas, the St. Mary's, and the BYUs in this league. And let me start, Tytel, let me start with you, because one of them is a guard that played at a team that you had a little bit of love for, I think.
Stevens Point.
No, talk about the new head coach over there at Pacific. You want to throw a little love at him his way?
I want to throw as much love as I can at Damon Stoudemire. He was an assistant to Sean Miller at Arizona, an assistant to Josh Pastner at Memphis, NBA Rookie of the Year in 1996, All-American with the Cats in 1995, helped him get to the Final Four in 94. He will go down as one of the, I don't know about all-time greats, but he was a great Wildcat. He comes into a tough situation at Pacific. The good news, he's a lot of juniors and seniors in place, although much guard heavy. Miles Reynolds at the point, David Taylor and TJ Wallace at the two. I think he can recruit California, and I think he can improve the team's fortunes going forward. God knows, I don't think he was brought in to work his magic in 1 year. But I think it's a great hire, and I love that the Lute Olson coaching tree keeps growing and growing and growing.
Well, yeah, and just it's not often I say this about coaches and people, but when I line his career up next to mine, it's pretty comparable. Very, very good hire here, by the way.
Okay, we've got to work out that mute button here. But
Matt, I love this new feature.
Matt, another former guard with NBA ties that's coming in here is new head coach over at Portland, where Terry Porter takes over. Not expecting much of anything, but do you think he's the type of guy that could turn that program around?
Oh, yeah. I think with the experience out West playing for the Trailblazers and that he's familiar with the atmosphere there and clearly he's enthusiastic enough about it to go cross-country once more. And I could see him winning there. It will be tough for them to rise with the top three programs, I think, all in pretty good shape. And then they have not yet mentioned who I think is going to do a very good job and have Santa Clara up in the top four. So it's going to be hard for them to crack the top of the WCC, but hey, maybe in an off year where, say, a couple of the top teams are down, maybe they sneak in, win a conference tournament. But I think you do a decent job at Portland, but that's going to be tough for them to see the top of this league.
Well, and again, what we're really looking at here is how quickly he rebuilds it. I don't think anyone's really looking at Portland to contend this season. But look at one other guy who's trying to rebuild a program, and I think this may be. Although it's not the biggest name, the best hire in the WCC over at San Francisco, David Ware, Kyle Smith, yeah. Who used to be assistant both at San Diego and St. Mary's, so a lot of WCC ties, won the CIT last year at Columbia, coming back out west.
Yeah, love this hire. I love what he did at Columbia. I know they never finished first, but they went from being a not a tire fire, but just a sewage fire to competing in the Ivy League. He did a fantastic job. The building job he did at Columbia, I think, was more of a task than what he's going to be faced with at San Francisco. That's not to say that he doesn't have a lot of work to do, but I love this hire by the Dons. Great hire, home run by the Dons.
Stalico, one other new coach, and Matt hinted at him already, over at Santa Clara, and this may be the guy with the best shot at making at least a little bit of noise this year, and Herb Sendek coming into Santa Clara there.
I mean, that is correct, Herb Sendek. I mean, this is going to be his first trip back to under the radar since he was coaching at Mother Miami in the mid-90s. I mean, he had a very good career at Miami when they were called the Redskins. This was the pre-Red Hawks era. But he also had a very somewhat decent career at NC State and Arizona State. But this does give him a bit of a fresh start. But Santa Clara is a program that I believe has not made the NCAA tournament since some guy named Steve Nash was one of their star players.
Yeah, can I say that? I mean, Herb Sendek, while not a Hall of Fame coach, is still a very good coach. He had Miami inside the bubble, the Red Hawks, the Redskins at the time, not the Canes. And how many Sweet Six? I mean, he was a regular NCAA participant that got a couple rounds in most of the time at NC State. Not great, but not bad at all. He has the rep of being in this awful bust of a coach, and while he's not a Hall of Fame coach, he's still pretty good.
Well, John T., you have given that Sendek has some Pac-12 ties there with you also, do you think he's going to have any success here, especially with a veteran lineup his first season led by Jared Brownridge?
I think he'll have some success. Fun fact, Herb Sendek and Tom Crean have each made the same number of NCAA tourneys in their career, 8. Herb is a great veteran coach. He's getting thrown into the fire a little bit. The schedule looks pretty brutal. I believe Arizona, Vandy, Butler, and Valpo. Like, good luck with that non-conference. Yeah. Brownridge is great, the 2014 West Coast Rookie of the Year. He's also got Nate Kratz as a senior power forward. But I don't think there's enough there to make a big splash. The best player, quote-unquote, on the roster might be his assistant coach, former 2004 ACC Player of the Year, Julius Hodge.
Okay, well, Matt, there's three teams we have not yet discussed at all Pepperdine, Loyola Marymount, San Diego. Is there anything with any of those three that you wanted to highlight heading into this season?
I would say last year there was a lot of hopes for Pepperdine. Maybe not be an at-large team, but be sort of in the conversation, and they just could not build on a good 2014-2015. And now, after like failing to take their chance last year, might be back in the pack here with the top three in good shape, and then a lot of good new coaches come into the league. This is bad news for the Waves.
Yeah. They were one of the main reasons that St. Mary's ultimately made the NIT as opposed to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. One of the things about Pepperdine that works against them, I think, is their location. I mean, who would want to go to Malibu for 4 years? Right. On the
Tytel, what about a team like Loyola Marymount or even Lamont Smith down there in his, I believe, his second year down in San Diego? Any chance these teams can get competitive, maybe not this year, but the next couple of years?
Probably not, unless Stephen Haney, the junior wing player from Loyola Marymount, brings his cousin in to join the team, some guy named Magic Johnson.
He may have used up all his eligibility, but we'll look into that.
2 years, I think.
It's a big manual, and we are well, some of us are lawyers.
Well,
I just break the law.
What I'd like to do at this point is run through each of you and ask you what your projections are for the West Coast Conference, as in, are they a two-team, two-bid league or three, and what type of seeds we're looking at for those bids. Matt, let me start with you.
I'm going to say three teams in, and I'm going to give Gonzaga a two seed, St. Mary's a six, and I'm going to say a 10 for BYU.
Okay. Now let's go to somebody who's not off the deep end on Gonzaga. Let me go to Tytel.
This conference, I think I'm setting the over under at 2.5. I think Gonzaga is in. I think 2 is a little high. I'll give them a 5 seed. St. Mary's, I don't think they're a lock, but they have a good shot at being a white jersey, as David likes to say. So I'll put them at an 8 seed. BYU is the coin flip. I could easily see them missing out on the bubble. Last year, they had chance after chance in non-conference play. Utah lost. Colorado lost. Harvard lost. They need some good non-conference wins if they want to make this tourney as like a double-digit 11 or 12 seed.
David, your thoughts?
Gonzaga, protected seed, albeit not a 1 or a 2 like Matt does. I think a 4 is about where they land. St. Mary's, first ballot team, meaning they're in regardless of what happens in all the conference tournaments, 9 seed or better, maybe even 8, 7 line. And I think BYU, despite their conference or schedule, certainly not because of it, gets in as a bubble team, so 11-12 range.
And Salika, second to last.
I'm going to say Gonzaga probably is going to hover around either a 4 or a 5 seed. St. Mary's can probably get a 5 or a 6, although one of the key things for the Gaels is there's a chance they may play the first 4 rounds within 75 miles of campus because of sites in Sacramento with the new Golden One Center and also San Jose. And then I'm going to say BYU probably gets to the NIT, and Pepperdine may sneak into either the CIT or CBI.
Wow. Okay. We are now going with CBI projections. We have really.
Our bracketology show next week, all the way down.
But I kind of am almost aligned with Tytel. I think that the Zags are around a 4-5 seed, possibly sneak into a 4, probably a 5 seed. I got St. Mary's a little bit higher. I think they'll be in the 6-7 range. BYU, if they make it, I think they're going to Dayton, and they're going to make a complete nightmare for all those bracketologists that try to build brackets and get them in there. But on behalf of myself, Chad Sherwood, we got Matt Sikowski, John Tytel, David Griggs, John Salika, and our new Zoom podcasting. We want to thank you all for joining us, and we'll talk to you again real soon.